Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Big Jim, joined with...
I'm Andy Goode.
And...
Producer Rob.
Another boy.
That's how I feel. You know, just Producer Rob.
Well...
Like, down and depressed.
Well, I'm not. Well, I am absolutely buzzing. What a weekend of ruggers that we're going to get into, Andrew. Loads to get through. Not just for the Calcutta Cup match. We can touch on the Dublin game.
No, let's talk about England A putting 90 points on Portugal.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Oh, okay.
That'll be in the good, won't it? Okay, the Murley, big shout out to you. Drama. In France as well, called it.
Yes.
Called it an Ireland's dominance, which we both called.
There's going to be a lot to talk about. Do we have to talk about the Calcutta Cup?
We have to.
Yeah, we will.
We have to.
We will. Plus, we've got our mate Dan Begger joining us again this week. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
Subscribe on Spotify. That a boy, Rob. It's class to have you, mate. The feedback on the last episode was very good. So it was great to mix it up. And I don't know what happens, Biggs, when you're on the TV, but your anecdotes before the game about how Wales are going to play and how they were going to get into the wider channels, the kick into the wide channel on cue, first play of the game from Wales. I wonder if Borthers went back and was like, actually, we should have listened to what Dan Bigger was saying before.
Biggs knows his onions, doesn't he?
He knows his onions. And he gave it away then. Yeah. So you're very good on TV. How did you enjoy it, Dan, being pitch side?
I did enjoy it. Really enjoyed it. I enjoyed still being part of match day. So it was quite nice to be part of that in a less pressured environment, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I was pitch side at the weekend.
Were you, James?
Yeah, I was pitch side. Big Jim Show Live.
Oh, the Big Jim Show Live. I was going to say with ITV or BBC. Or...
I thought you'd have been in the stands with Gerard Butler and J.K. Rowling. And
he was trying to get in there. He was trying to get in there.
I was chatting to J.K. Rowling for the whole of half time. So I'm trying to get her on the podcast.
Divisive character. You have to be careful talking to these people, James.
But that's not my genre. That's not my field of expertise. So
that would be a good guest for the pod. Fair play.
Yeah, no, she'd be good. But I was chatting to her husband, actually. Big shout out to Neil, who's a doctor. We were talking about child obesity. Rob, why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing, Rob?
We were talking about cereal, Cocoa Pops in supermarkets. That's how deep we went. That was our half-time analysis. But talking of being pitch side, I know, Biggs, you obviously love it. Andrew, we love it as well. But I was there pitch side at the weekend. It's a great place to be.
It is, yeah. I prefer being in a pub hosting something. So. Biggs, where were you?
I was actually... very, very much man flu last week, and I'm lucky to still be here this afternoon, lads. I was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, literally laid up in bed. So we played Poe away actually on the weekend.
I was going to say, I had a look. You weren't playing. I'm like, he doesn't fancy Poe.
Who does?
So I was laid up and just about managed to get myself right for the weekend to watch some of the rugby and bits and pieces. But I was lucky to survive. We actually had a hell of a week last week. So on Monday, my eldest had a ear infection, so we had to take him to the doctors on Monday. Then Tuesday, Wednesday, basically knocked me out for six. And then Wednesday evening, just managed to muster up a little bit of energy to take the baby outside. And he ended up having an allergic reaction to like a caterpillar, which is out here.
God.
His face was all swollen like that. So we had to take him to the doctor straight away then at like 6, 7 o'clock on Wednesday night, feeling like that. So shout out to my wife for an absolute trooper of a week she's had. So she's had to put up with a fair bit this week.
Wow.
So,
come home, Dan. Dan, come home. Get fucking out of there now. Hey. Oh, my word. It's kids. That's it. Like, our kids have been ill.
Yeah,
and like Rob's nodding his head as well, Biggs. And like, we're not selling it, but don't have kids because you...
Or just get a nanny.
Or get a nanny.
Get a nanny. That's what you need.
Yeah. But this is a different Biggs.
I'm going to have to get a few more quid in the bank first, Goody, like yourself, and then I'll be all right together.
In the long term, it saves money, I reckon.
Yeah.
I like that Biggs has been on the show for 2 weeks now and he's already started whinging.
Yeah. We've changed him. Whinging about the kids.
Yeah. I don't know whether it was that bad. I think it was the fact that he had poo away and he was like,
yeah,
I
didn't fancy it.
But how do you get there? We're too long. Are you getting, like, is it buses still?
No, luckily, because of how far it is, it was a plane. So if it was a bus, I could understand your point, Jim. But with a plane from Toulon Airport, it wasn't too bad. But we got Perpignan home this weekend, so I think I'll be all right for that one.
Yeah. Mate, I remember playing Toulon at home for Brive, right? I'm sure it was a Friday night game. And Tana Umong is playing for all coaching them, I think. Mm. And Bujalal was the boss and all this stuff. And they've lost to us in Brive. And they were supposed to fly back, and he went, nah. he cancelled the plane and made him get the bus back from Brive to Toulon, 12 hours. Like,
so the old team manager managed to talk him round in the end to get him to put the flight back on. and he called him in on Monday morning and he said, you ever do that again, you're the first one out the door.
Oh, God.
Really?
So things have changed. Things are a lot more stable now than they were back in those days. But, I mean, it's still French rugby, still highs and lows. Jim, you know, Bugudi, you know what it's like. It's the highs are very high and the lows are very low. So it all depends on the result on the weekend. So we've struggled a little bit over the last few weeks. So the mood is a little bit lower than you'd expect. So hoping for a win this weekend.
Producer Rob, where were you? We're talking about what we were doing at the weekend. Biggs is in bed, Goody's at the pub, I'm pitch side. Where are you?
Oh, it was a rough one.
Oh, were you ill?
I am now. Yeah. Me and the lads went up to Newcastle to watch the games.
Horrible. Really?
Yeah.
Sure. Wait, where'd you watch it?
Went at the Shark Club right next to St. James
Park. Yeah. I used to stay in that hotel.
Oh, nice.
The Sandman.
Yeah, we didn't stay in there.
No?
No.
That's
no.
Where they put me up.
We stayed in the Travelodge down the road.
No, there you go.
Spot 30 quid a night.
Hang on. So why have you gone to Newcastle and stayed in the Travelodge? Why haven't you gone home?
It's a Saturday night.
Yeah, exactly.
How far is it from you?
Well, about 45 minutes.
Yeah. How many pints?
Oh, I don't know.
Responsibly?
3 or 4.
30 or 40.
More importantly, Rob, how was yesterday after it with 2 kids?
Oh, I don't want to talk about that.
That's why it steals the sunshine. I don't drink anymore. Like, you can't trust me. Don't trust me, I don't drink.
You're one of them.
Well, Ravo came up, my best mate came up.
Well, you posted the picture of you two and I'm like, they're going to have a big night. They are going to have a big
night.
That
was on the way home.
Oh, was it on the way
home?
That's
as sad as it was. That's like 11 o'clock. I know you're not on Instagram. Pigs, we need to get you on Instagram. It's all happening on there.
Maybe when I retire, I can venture on there, I think.
Yeah.
Safe enough then.
We know a man where you can buy a load of followers in Indonesia and...
When you say we, you, James.
Yeah,
you.
Not me. Rob. Rob said it for the algorithm.
You bought 125,000.
Yeah, but I should have celebrated.
You should have.
But we didn't.
And that's the thing. I saw that picture of you. I had a bit of envy, to be fair, even though we lost. I'm thinking he's going out. He's going to Tiger Lily's, all this stuff with the lads. Had a FaceTime with Andrew Brace. I said, mate, you did well. I thought you ref well, right?
Yeah,
and we'll
did.
Come on to it in a bit. I'm in the pub and I've actually tried to FaceTime him at half time. He says, so John Lacey, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, John Lacey's like his mentor, his coach, and he obviously goes in at half time and checks his phone to get a bit of feedback. And he said, all I'm doing at half time is trying to speak to my fucking coach and this FaceTime of Andy Coo keeps popping up and he's fucking denying it. Anyway, so he FaceTimes me with Finn from the aftermatch function and Finn's just there giving me the bird. And all that stuff. And I've got home at this point, so I've taken myself away because I had to work on Sunday up in Leicester at the England A game. And he's in his room getting ready. He's like, so it's going to be a good night. And I've seen the picture of you going out and I'm thinking, oh, I'd love to be there. But
no, it was good. I did see Bracey before the game, actually. And look, mate, the refs are getting a hard time at the minute. And we haven't spoken about it with you, Dan. The Grand Slam that never is. We're calling it the Fan Slam now.
You are.
Yeah, I'm calling it the Fan Slam.
But you've got to win all your games to win any sort of slam, right?
Yeah, but in my mind, we beat France. And that was a conversation around Bracey.
Jim, I'm glad I wasn't on the pod that week after that. I don't know how I'd have managed with you after that, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I was pretty matter-of-fact about it. I was.
And I thought we talked about it, didn't we? And in the way it was managed... Because he hasn't seen the ball down, I don't think he can give the try. We all know it's more than likely a try.
Oh, don't be, look, you don't need to say that now. Like, we agreed that it
would've,
was a try.
Would've, should've, could've, though, eh?
Would've, should've, could've. But should we start with the could've and did've?
You've won it again, Jim.
We have.
The end. Right, let's move on to Wales Island.
It's not even a thing now. I'm going to ask Dan first. Hand on heart, right? Be honest, because... Caused a few dramas myself with the England players in the week. Like, Ben Earl weren't happy. I don't think some of the boys were happy because producer Rob did a hell of an edit on a video saying that I had Scotland to win by 15. I actually had them by 8, but I did say 15 at some point. Well, blow me down. Wasn't I right?
Well, this is the thing. You can say these things on a podcast, but when people say put your money where your mouth is, you bottled a bet, didn't you, with Austin?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because... You said, oh, okay, I meant by 8 points. I said by 8 points.
But I did say by 8 points then, on the podcast.
Yeah, but then Austin comes at you on social media and says, should we have a bet on it? We'll have a grand.
Mm.
And you went, oh, no, I'll go a grand on Scotland just to win.
I heard it was the weather. I heard it was raining. So I didn't want to double down on it. But Biggs, be honest, mate, because we went back and forth. Did you have Scotland winning that game before?
I had Scotland by 5. I was a little bit panicking after the first 10 minutes of that game for my prediction. But I got to be honest, I thought Scotland were... very, very worthy of their win. I thought they were by far the better team over the course of the 80 minutes. And if anything, probably deserved a bigger margin for victory, I thought.
No, that's enough from Dan Bigger now. Thanks, Dan. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
I was very happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what it looked like to me, boys? I don't know what you thought. It looked to me as if it was one team that looked completely in control of how they wanted to play, and the other team looked as if they were almost forcing a way to play. I'm not 100% sure England really are that comfortable playing the way that they're playing. For me, I don't care what style of rugby you play, me personally, as long as it's winning rugby. I appreciate you've got to grow the game. But at the minute, with the players that they're picking, that England team doesn't look comfortable in the way that they're playing. And if you want to play this more exciting brand rugby, then pick everybody who plays for Quins and Northampton.
Here we go.
Or you go back to your type, which effectively got the job done in the second half against Wales, because they went back to type and they battened down the hatches a little bit and reverted to type and got the job done really well. You're always dictated to the style of play you play by your players.
Yeah.
And for me, it just looked as if Scotland were completely comfortable in the way that they were playing, and England looked a bit uncomfortable, to be honest, in how they played.
I think, I don't want to go... We're going to talk about how England played, but first and foremost, let's talk about Scotland, because they've won the last four Calcutta Cups, deservedly so. It used to be a thing of Scotland, when I played, and historically it'd be Scotland might win once in a blue moon. Now it's like England might win once in a blue moon. It's flipped completely, hasn't it? Now, with someone like Duane van der Merwe, you know, just ridiculous. Last year, he scores the wonder try at Twickenham. This year, from the turnover, the second try, he scores. He's just like a man mountain, isn't he? Mm. So they make the break, and credit Scotland. I actually didn't think Scotland... You've had your second biggest win ever against us.
And we didn't play that well.
It didn't play that well.
No.
But you were always, like Big said, they were in control of how, you know, Finn... Even Gregor comes out of the game and said, you know, that last 20 minutes we should have ran with the ball more. Finn controlled the game beautifully without, you know, just producing moments of magic or chucking it around. And in the first 10 minutes... I think, what was it, 18 minutes in, we're 10-0 up and looking comfortable. And we were putting Scotland under pressure with the blitz, and there was a few errors, but they stuck at that, and then they profited from an England error.
Another England error and another England error.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Goody. And then another error from scrum time. You know, they make the break, they capitalise, and they were so clinical. You know, even Cam Redpath comes on and, you know, Finn gets his kick charge down. England are at sixes and sevens. Cam's, you know, there's a little nudge from Finn on Ollie Lawrence, which is, you know, perfectly fine. But England all honeypot to the ball, and you know, Cam makes the break, and then England are all over the shop, and Finn pulls out the perfect game. They did come from some England errors, but Scotland were always looking like they were going to win that game once they got that first try.
The storm, yeah,
and they didn't play that as well as they could. No, so it just shows how good they can be.
Exactly, and like Dan said, and like a lot of people are saying, and like we were chatting about last week, like, you know how Scotland are going to play, right? As in, there's a clear identity with Finn there, with the wide passes into the channel. Can they get past the blitz? I know we were joking about it before we came on, but that one kind of, it was a bit of a clutch kind of crossfield kick, wasn't it, that went into Duane's, or bounced and then into his hands for the hat-trick try. But there's a clear identity there of how they want to play. And I saw enough in the game against France in the first half, in the first half against Wales. I feel as if we've got power in our team now. With Jack Dempsey at eight, he can get over the gain line. You've got George Turner, you've got Scott Cummins, you've got these lads that come on to the ball with a little bit of pace and can kind of give us the opportunity then to play wide. But what impressed me the most was how much pressure we were under for the first 10 or 15 minutes. There'd been this big build-up. We've got England's number. All the emotional drivers that England came with the passing of Jamie George's mum. And they came with a really kind of simple game plan, or so it seemed. And it looked like they, from where I was watching and feeling it, that they had the same energy and the same kind of game plan, which they did change, as they had against South Africa. That up and under game, the short box kicks, the kind of 50-50 balls to knock back, and then they were winning the kind of, whatever, I don't know what you call them, Biggs or Goody, we call them the crumbs, that were kind of bouncing around. Yeah. Yeah, like them 50-50s. Mm. They scored a first phase off the scrum, and I'm thinking, fucking hell, quote unquote, England are on.
Yeah.
Like the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, they were on physically, Sam Underhill breakdown, they were banging boys, they were physical. But the thing that impressed me most about Scotland was the fact that we rode that storm, we didn't start well, and we got ourselves into the game. And like Goody said, like, you know the identity, we look comfortable. but we looked comfortable being uncomfortable against a team that were fighting for their lives and they were desperate. And then just on that England point as well, that was the thing we were chatting about last week, Biggs, is like, how are you going to play? You bring Ben Spencer on, he's a box-kicking eye. I think that that suits England, but then you've got Feo Ubosa, who needs to get the ball in hand as much as he wants, but you've got no Freddie Stewart in there. You bring George Martin on the back row and he drops that kick in the backfield. Even like, how many times has he been in that position? Do you know what I mean? So they are still kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, my issue with it is started well, you know, accurate, and our accuracy went, and then, might sound a bit harsh saying this, we looked lost in attack. You know, we were going one out runners. Genji was trying his hardest, but there was no structure to our attack. I felt George Ford went missing, which some people might think that's a bit harsh, but comparing him to Owen Farrell, when your 10 is the alpha, the leader, bawling at people, telling them where to be, what to do, like we had none of that. After 20 minutes, it was all like just waiting for someone to try something or do something. There didn't seem to be any structure, and we looked very lost in attack. And we've got an inexperienced coaching team in terms of under Steve. Wiggy's a good mate of mine, right? Richard Wigglesworth, he's our attack coach. But between what they're doing on the training field, if they are, I presume they're looking to evolve and have shape and identity in attack, to then on the field, it disappeared, and the energy of our performance, and we were slow. Our ruck speed was really slow. One out runners, which obviously makes it easier to defend against. And, you know, when you need someone to stand up and as a 10 and lead and telling boys what to do, you know what it's like, Dan? It's like herding sheep sometimes, isn't it, with forwards?
I've got to be honest, I never felt, you know, you guys just mentioned now, you know, England started really well, got to a 10-0 lead. I always felt like Scotland had the ability, because they know their game really well, to come back into the game. When Scotland got ahead, I never felt like England had the ability to come back and claw that game back, if that makes sense. Because almost every time that they gained a little bit momentum, they'd go to that sort of slowing the game down, box kicking it, and weren't really getting a huge amount from it. And I think probably summed up where the two teams were, that when you are comfortable in how you play and you've got a little bit more confidence in your ability, you find a way to get back into games and you find a way to ride out the tough times. Whereas when you probably are still trying to find that identity and find that confidence in how you're trying to play, it's so much harder to get back into it. And your point, Goody, on George Ford, I thought George Ford 2 weeks before against Wales grabbed that game by the scruff of the neck in that second half and dragged this team through, was probably unable to do that this week, because of so many errors that they made as a team. And I just felt like that probably didn't help him as well. But it was a really tough watch if you're an England fan that second half. I've got to be honest. Scotland looked comfortable throughout the whole period, really, I thought. Yeah.
Until Feo Ubosa comes on, and George Martin had a little dig as well. No one really running with spite or trying to, you know, run over, run round, you know, break a tackle. It just seemed lackluster.
He offers something a bit different, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He offers something a bit different.
Yeah, and every time he got the ball, he looked scary. Yeah. And that's where, like, as in, it's interesting listening to Dan say that. I don't know whether this is my history of playing against England, but I was worried about our bench coming on. So when Joe Marler comes on against Elliot Miller-Mills, who's fourth choice for Northampton, I'm thinking, fucking, like, as you just naturally worried, right? Yeah. As in, it's Joe Marler coming on. Our bench has struggled historically in games before. The strength and depth of Scotland has been brought into question. I've questioned it as well. So I was a little bit worried. But yeah, I just think, like, things started going our way. We did, if whatever the rub of the green is, but you know what I mean? The bounce of the ball, the crumb started bouncing up. Mm. Like the scrum, we held our own. We got a couple of kind of short free kicks off the back of that. As much as it was a scrappy performance, like, in a way, it felt such a complete performance.
Yeah, controlled.
It was a very un-Scotland performance almost, Jim, wasn't it?
Exactly.
In terms of winning those types of scrap, you know, we all know that they're capable of playing some brilliant rugby and sort of probably a little bit sort of, when the highs are really high in the game, they're magnificent. But when they're not on it, then things are a bit more catastrophic. Whereas I think this Six Nations, and probably is summed up a little bit by Finn as well, in terms of, I think Finn's had a really, really good Six Nations. But what I think has been really good for him and for the team is that he's almost been just quite level, and he's just been
100%.
Rather than having loads of high moments and then some really low moments, which kind of is what you associate with Scotland. I think he's just been pretty constant, pretty accurate in what he's done, few errors, and the rest of the team have kind of fed off that. Because all of a sudden, at 10-0 down, if Finn decides he's got to try and pull a rabbit out of the hat, and then all of a sudden you go 17-0 down from a charge down kick or an interception or something,
that's
then it is a different
game,
for. Isn't it?
That is what I was hoping for.
Yeah, but even like how, you know, like you're talking about Finn being level. So he turned up to the live show on Thursday, 48 hours before, loads of hysteria, and like he was very direct in terms of what is captaincy there. You know, we were like, can you chop a pint? He's like, of course not, game in 48 hours. But the old Finn would have chopped a pint. Yeah. But he's very clear on what was coming. We were like, you know, how do you think England are going to play? They're going to rush me in defence. They're going to put me on the floor. Very different to playing against France where they rush on the players outside. So he knew what was coming. But the one for me was chatting to him after. And again, he had a can of Tennent's in his hand, and it's Finn,
can
right?
Of
so yeah, loves it, mate.
How old school Tennent's?
He was keen for a scrap, you know. You could say he's got, and it was warm as well. I was like, that a fucking boy.
You can't drink Tennent's cold. No. You have to be just from the shelf.
That's exactly what he said. And listening to him talk about how level like he was in his mind as captain, and respectful, but he was like, we expected to win.
Yeah,
as in we expected to beat England. And we know we've got a job to do in Rome.
Yeah.
Like, we want to get to Ireland and be in a position which we know, like bonus points that we've dropped and stuff like that, we're probably going to struggle. But as a captain, as a leader, as a lad that puts a smile on people's face, just the level that he's got now, like he's grown up. Like, that's what it feels like. The control on and off the pitch feels like it's just aligned. And it shows you how much, you know, Biggs being the same for Wales and Owen being the same and Johnny Sexton, it just shows how important the Tennent's.
Yeah.
You're kind of the barometer for the team, aren't you, really? And, you know, like I said, maybe before Finn was a little bit more up and down, wasn't he, Jim, probably, in terms of his performances, whereas now he is very much more, a lot more settled, and those errors have come out of his game and he's just playing with so much confidence at the minute. So I think that's obviously helped them massively. I was speaking to Ben White this morning, actually, because he's obviously here in Toulon, and he was saying at sort of 10-0 down, there was no real panic from them. That first try for Van der Merwe, they're almost gifted a little bit. So they almost got gifted a bit of, you know, from England's blitz defence off the scrum. I mean, it was about as bad a scrum defence as you can come across from, I think it was Slade and Lawrence, wasn't it, in terms of just shooting up.
And, Lawrence has stepped in, and I reckon he stepped in. It's the 10's tackle, but I reckon he stepped in because if you watch George Ford's shape in defence, he ain't interested in going at Tuipulotu there. It's a 9-12 Biggs, right? So, and then you've got the play out the back and they've come off the blitz and it's a new... Borta's used the excuse after the game around...
Combination
of 10, 12, 13, have never played together. George Ford's got 90-odd caps. Lawrence has got 26 caps.
Yeah.
Slady's got 60 caps and it's a new system. So, I don't know, that doesn't sit well with me, that.
Yeah, Andrew's not happy.
I could tell, Jim, I could tell. But no, we worked under Sean for 10, 12 years with Wales and we never, ever defended like that because it's such a vulnerable place to defend. Any half mistake off a scrum, you're probably going to be under your sticks.
Especially without your 9 on your inside of the 10 as well, Biggs, are you on that side?
Exactly. I did feel like that was... There's times to be aggressive in defence and I actually quite like the way that the England are trying to be aggressive in their D, but you have to pick and choose your times and I didn't think that was the right time, I've got to be honest. And it invited Scotland back into the game. Now, if that game had stayed at 10-0 for another 10, 15 minutes, then you know you never quite know how the game was going to go. But Ben was also telling me that there's no way that Duane van der Merwe scores a hat-trick for Edinburgh against Zebra on a Friday night in January. He was saying that he's looked after well and he produces on big occasions.
He steps up for the big games and you need X-factor players, right, internationals. Well, let's talk about his stats then. He scored 26 tries in 37 tests for Scotland.
That's all right.
It's better than all right, isn't it? And he loves playing the big games against England, right? Because, and I mentioned Faye Wabosa, then it's same in Wales with Lewis Rees-Sammet. There was games, I'll go back to that Wales-Scotland game up in Edinburgh a few years back when you were playing Biggs, weren't you?
Yeah.
And Lewis Rees-Sammet wins the game with a
chip
bit of magic,
over,
doesn't
it?
Yeah. And you need those players. And Duane's been that player for Scotland, along with Finn. But they are now very comfortable in how they play, whereas England have lacked that, I think. You know, we've got someone now in Faye Wabosa, but stick him on the end when we've lost.
Mm.
And you've mentioned Ben White there, Biggs. Gregor wasn't happy after the game, was he?
Yeah, about Ben White being back in Toulon.
No. He didn't mention the top 14 clubs.
No, he didn't, no.
He mentioned the Premiership clubs.
Even though there's no games.
Yeah, there's no games.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. There's no games, but obviously pretty vocal post-match criticising the Premiership clubs for not allowing his star players to join the Scotland camp, which I understand his frustration. He didn't mention the top 14 clubs in Ben White, for example, but, or Blair Kinghorn, he's probably got to go back as well.
Mm.
But this is the thing, when you're talking about Duane van der Merwe, they get the right to look after him and he ain't going to Zebra away or he ain't playing some of those games. And you mentioned his knee. If he's playing at a Premiership club on 350 bags a year, if that's what it was, and this is the thing, we always talked about Biggs going back and grafting for Saints, didn't you, Biggs, in between Six Nations. And it's tough.
And acting like he loved it as well, where I've been there, Biggs. I don't know whether you're comfortable to say.
I'll be honest with you, Northampton were unbelievable with me. And I reckon about four times I reckon I had to go back in the 4 years there. Chris Boyd in particular was just incredible in terms of, he sort of said, look, we know that it's not ideal for you coming back here, driving up the motorway and banged up after two weekends of playing international rugby. So quite often he'd sort of look after me and say, look, we're not going to play you this weekend, but just make sure you get your rest and recovery in rather than that. And
yeah, I think it's criminal.
I think it's something that definitely needs to change.
100%.
But Premiership Rugby have to protect
Regulation 9.
But yeah, they and their interests. Yeah. And the deal they've got with the RFU. Yeah.
In my opinion, the game has moved on so far now that you can't hide behind a contract. You can't hide behind a legal letter and saying they need to be released. But we're talking about player welfare. We're talking about like the best athletes playing at such a high level.
But from Premiership Rugby's perspective, they're saying England pay for the right for that.
Mm.
And that's part of the whole Professional Game Board agreement. So they're saying England pay for the right to have their players whenever they want. So then all of a sudden, if that's gone, and we all hope it is gone around the global season at some point, but as it stands at the minute, Premiership Rugby then don't have a leg to stand on with England, and England could just go, oh, we don't need to give you any money, and then we'll just take them when we want, which means the value of their league diminishes even more. And that's the difference between, you know, and Greg is saying it, and I get it, you want all your best players, and you want to look after them. As it stands at the minute, you've got to have them playing in your own country.
And
that's the argument.
Yeah, well, that is the argument. And I mean, like, who have you got this weekend? You say Perpignan.
Perpignan, yeah.
Right?
Perpignan home, yeah. Yep.
So Perpignan home. So Ben White's gone from that game and everything around the match and emotional and physical, and then he's got to go to Perpignan. Not Perpignan, he's got to go to Perpignan.
Yeah.
And I've done it, right? So I can say from my perspective, I had a six-day turnaround, played against Wasps, got our pants pulled down, then had to fly from Birmingham on Sunday night to Edinburgh to train on Monday, and then I put my back out. I had to fly down to London on the Wednesday to get an epidural in my back.
Why can't you get one in Scotland?
Edinburgh.
Why can't you get an epidural?
Because I'd see a specialist, I don't know. I had to come down and then.
You ain't got any in Scotland?
Well, not for the people they wanted to
you
do
want,
it.
You want our top physicians and doctors as well as. You want everything?
Yeah. I might have just fabricated the story to make it sound worse, but then I played against England 6 days, like 6 day turnaround.
Did you win?
Nearly. I was fucked. My body was wrecked. And I was like, I know we're going down a rabbit hole and it's historic, but it's happening right now. Biggs has done it. You know, I've done it before and we're watching players now. Yeah. I just don't think, if we're talking about player welfare, and I'm all for five games on the spin, so I'm not saying about that. I just think that you're going into a different environment, different training. You know, if there's, I don't know, fucking whatever, some coughs going around or Biggs has got the flu and he's next to Ben McWhite. We need Ben for the Italy game. He's got to be 100. And this is just a biased opinion.
No, I understand.
But I understand the legal jargon, regulation.
And also, there is a responsibility on those players, and Biggs would understand it. He said he was lucky that Saints looked after him so well. But you take a bigger contract.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's like what we say in France. You take a bigger contract to go and play in France, you play a lot more rugby.
Mm.
And it's not just the headline number of what you're going to get paid. Some players are luckier than others, aren't they? Let's be honest.
I think you've summed it up perfectly there, Goody. I think if you do decide to play outside of the country, which can have the ability to protect you and look after you a little bit more in terms of game time and training wise, then you have to accept that that's life. But also as well, you know, I've also been probably on the luckier side of the draw. Compared to some other people who've probably been slightly less fortunate than
rinsed.
Me, so let's call it as it is. Yeah.
Maybe we'll finish on that, Biggs. We'll ask Goody because you've gone.
Would you move some of the older players on now and start thinking about the future? Like
that's where Goody's gone all in, and you feel like you've got a responsibility, which is absolutely fine.
I speak to so many England fans who are now like, right, great, we've had these players, we've got these players, and it's hard saying, look at what Wales have done. With a lot of the elder players, you have to regrow somehow. And, you know, the likes of Joe Marler, the likes of Dan Cole, brilliant players, have been amazing servants. Look at Courts, right? Courtney Laws, we know he's signed for Breathe now. Oh, my breath. Like, he has.
650, apparently. just what I've heard.
He's done well.
Did you boys just see the announcement video that Breathe did for him as well? But it was some video, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was good.
I played to them. Yeah. They did a brilliant job. Yeah.
I was trying to pause it on the contract just to see if I could see the Euros, but obviously you're not going to get it. Like, I do that on the football contracts as well. It's like, you ain't going to see it. But
I genuinely think now, I was at the England Day against Portugal game on Sunday. There's a lot of good young talent here in England, but we're reticent to sort of get the broom out now. We've had the World Cup. You know, there's this evolution. Steve keeps talking about it's a young, inexperienced team. It's not. We've got 99 cap Danny Kerr. We've got George Ford on 90-odd caps. Marler, Dan Cole. You know, there's
Jamie Marrow.
There's a lot of experience in that squad, but there are players, I think, now that we're waiting for them to tell us when they don't want to play for England anymore. Mm. As in a player just saying, right, I've had enough. We need to be proactive now. There's the likes of, you know, you've got Ellis Genge as your loosehead prop. We've got Obano, who has been tearing up trees for Bath as a loosehead. Joe Marler can keep playing. Same with Dan Cole. You know, we've got some of these young tight head props. We've got Asher Opoku for Jaw at Sale, who's going really well. Joe Hayes, you know, younger guys that now, you know, you can start to push because there's a number of other players as well. And I don't want to just go through the whole list, but it's time. We talk about evolution. I generally believe now, you know, we'll get to the end of another Six Nations, would have played five, won two, lost three, and there's no evolution. Honestly, from when you speak to the England fans, what we've seen over the last, you see little shoots of good stuff here and there, but it's more negativity and doom and gloom without an evolution, without an identity. And now's the time for the reset button to be pressed by Steve. And I think he needs a big attack coach to come underneath him and help him evolve.
Goody, would you take, for argument's sake, I know you said the last couple of seasons they've gone 2 out of 5, haven't they, in the Six Nations. Would you take almost another, say, 2 out of 5 if they were to go with these new young players like your Furbanks, your Finn Smiths, your Dingwalls, yeah, your Pearsons, all these guys? Would you accept that, or would you think the England fans would accept that a bit more if they could see progress and a different, perhaps different way of playing? Because there is a massive jump up between club rugby and international rugby, isn't there, in terms of,
yeah, 100%.
You know, you'd probably gonna need a bit more time. But do you think the whole country would get behind that a little bit more rather than perhaps where they're obviously not quite comfortable at the minute doing that?
I think they would. The England fans are desperate to get behind England, and they were starting to come round, but we're still in the same position now. Like, we were poor against Scotland. So, you know, we've got England fans going, oh, we might take 50 against Ireland. We absolutely might if Ireland play to their potential. But I think if you carry on doing the same thing, it's definition of madness, isn't it? Doing the same thing and expecting different results. And so we now need to change and evolve and, you know, like, play Finn Smith at 10, or let's hope Marcus Smith is fit. We know what George Ford can do. He's good in some parts. He was really good against Wales in the second half. I think he went missing after 20 minutes at the weekend. Let's start to back Finn Smith and have George on the bench against Ireland if Marcus isn't fit, or let's build the team around Marcus.
Would you still keep those players in terms of, you know, like your George Fords, your Danny Cares, for argument's sake, as that experience and backup on the bench or in the squad?
Well, it's a tough balance,
I suppose,
isn't it?
As a safeguard, a little bit like what Wales are like at the minute, probably. Wales are probably 2, 3, or 4 senior players away from being potentially a really, really good team. And I know it'll take a little bit of time, but I think Wales have got these youngsters who are playing really, really well. But if they had maybe 2, 3, 4 more, you know, senior players in amongst that squad, maybe not even in the match day 23, but just around the group as well, maybe that is a bit of a transition period for them then.
Yeah,
you know?
But it's also hard, isn't it, as that player that's been 90-odd caps or whatever, and then saying, listen, mate, can you just come along and hold a few bags and help them out? You ain't playing. But you know what it's like, isn't it? It's a really hard balance.
Yeah, I think that, just on that, Goody, I think they've bowed down to public opinion on how they should play.
Yeah,
I like seeing England kick. I like seeing England be physical at the breakdown.
You like seeing England kick?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a really effective game plan. I think how they played against South Africa, and at points of the weekend where the ball goes up in the air, there's jeopardy, and then you've got players like the young Feu Boso coming on, and you interject this kind of like these one-off kind of moves off first phase where you've got an Ollie Lawrence or a Manu Tuilagi like running down them channels. I like that. Like, I don't think that the rush defence, you can't just magic a blitz defence. Yes, it takes time, you know, and they're based on Felix Jones with South Africa. Like, I understand the thinking of that, of having the need to evolve that drastically, but I think they've bowed down to public opinion, which I think is the wrong way to go. Like, I understand the Harlequins and the Northampton model when you've got the players in that, but Biggs will know better than me because I hardly won any international matches. You need a clear, simple game plan. Like Wales, and I say this respectfully, Wales aren't that far away. Like, you look at Wales, like, with what they're building.
So with Wales, when we were successful for that 10-year period, we weren't the fanciest team in the world by any stretch, but we stuck to what our identity was, and we had the players to play that game. And you look at Wales now, they simply haven't got the players to play the way that we played 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So they've had to find a new identity and try and play this faster paced game and try and expand a little bit more. Now, it's going to take time, and it's not going to be easy, but I think I wouldn't make any excuses. If you're a team that are successful and winning, I couldn't care how you play. And that's my opinion. All that matters in international rugby is winning. And I know you've got to grow the game. I know you've got to keep people entertained and things like that. But generally, from winning matches, you keep people entertained and interested in coming along every Saturday or every Six Nations in autumn, you know?
And that's the point. England have won two games in the last few Six Nations.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And so, you know, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. No,
but everyone's talking about evolution. Even Eddie Jones was talking about that.
We haven't ever evolved, though, have we? What? Over the last 4 years?
No, you haven't evolved, no, but Evan, there's talk of evolving.
And we're still getting the same results.
Yeah, because you're looking to try and do stuff like, as in try and do more. We want the attack. We need Owen Farrell to do this. We don't want him to be putting up the up and unders, like the box kicking game is really boring. Like, you know.
Oh, you need that in the game, but not to the extent that England did.
Yeah, I know. There was a couple of moments in the World Cup, that was the thing, where it was like, you know, they were kicking.
But that's now programmed and ingrained. I'll go back to, I think it was about 4 minutes before the end. Ben Spencer's put a box kick up and we were slow.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily Ben Spencer's fault, but that's what they're all programmed to do. I'm like, we're two scores down, lads. Where's the tempo?
Yeah.
Where's the desperation to go and try?
Yeah,
and
that was the one for me where it was like they just kicked, but they didn't know whether
they're programmed to
kick.
Do it.
Yeah, they didn't know whether to kick. Like, Ben knew it was probably the right option if everyone was set up for the 50-50, but no one was set up for the 50-50 because they're thinking we need to run it.
Anyway, just to end it all, Scotland have got the Calcutta Cup, but England are above Scotland in the world rankings. And that's all that matters, lads.
Yeah.
World rankings.
Well, we're on for the Triple Crown. That's all I know. Okay. Yeah. The fan slam. But we've got to come
congratulations, Jim. Yeah. Congratulations, Scotland. You deserved it.
So I see how humble I am now. Just quiet about it.
One day we'll win it again.
One day. But if Scotland are going to win the fan slam, we've got to beat Ireland on Paddy's weekend, which is in a few weeks, so it doesn't matter. What were your thoughts, Biggs, with the game against Wales?
What were my thoughts? I actually thought the first half didn't actually feel like an international match in that sense. It felt very much just like Ireland were going through their motions. I actually thought Ireland were okay on the weekend. That's probably the least impressed I've been by them this tournament, and for the last 12 months, I thought they were okay. They did enough. Wales probably didn't help themselves with 9 penalties conceded, whether they were right or wrong. But what I am impressed with Ireland is that they are so, so, so well drilled. That every single person, every single person knows what shape they're running, what their role is, their time in it. They weren't perfect on the weekend, Ireland, but They're just so well drilled. They've got so much power in that front five in particular that they just get themselves over the gain line, and life is so much easier for the rest of the team if they can get themselves moving forward. And, you know, Wales rallied in that second half, and I actually thought Wales have shown some really positive signs over the last few weeks without probably really being really at the end of the scoreline sort of thing. I know obviously against Scotland they came back and England, but I thought there was a big difference between the two teams on Saturday. One team was at the very, very top of world rugby, and probably Wales were in that transition period, and it showed on Saturday, I thought. But I thought they could be, Wales could be really proud of the effort they put in and stuck at it.
At half-time, Biggs, and I'm looking at it, and Ireland were in second or third gear, weren't they, in that first half?
Yeah.
Whilst looking really well organised in attack and all this stuff. Their attention to detail around clear outs, we spoke about late the other week, the lines people run, just how ruthless they are at the breakdown, creates such fast ball, right? And I tweeted at half-time, this could be 50 for Wales, like, because Ireland were in second or third gear. Were you worried at half-time that it could be an absolute hockey in, or did you know Gats has got some messages in him that, you know, spurred the boys on for that second half?
I actually think Ireland should have been maybe a little bit more ahead at halftime. They had so much dominance, and you know, I don't think Wales could have complained if they were 20-25-0 down at halftime by any stretch. But I think the opening 10 minutes of that second half, I suppose, really I suppose stopped it being 40 or 50 goody, to be honest, because they came out with an attitude of taking the game to Ireland a little bit more. Again, a little bit like what they did in Cardiff against Scotland a few weeks ago, up the tempo a little bit and put a little bit of pressure on Ireland, because in the first half they put absolutely zero pressure on Ireland. So it was a walk in the park for Ireland in that first half. But they put a bit of pressure, got a penalty try, got a yellow card, had some moments in that 22. I don't think even if they'd have scored from that period of pressure, they'd have gone on to win the game. But I think at least they were able to put, for a lot of people are saying, the best team in the world under
pressure for 10, 15 minute spells. And ultimately, Ireland had, like you said, Goody, Ireland had two or three more gears to go up to, even if the game got brought back to 17-10 or 17-13 or whatever it was. I think Wales can be really proud because they're not probably in the same breath as Ireland at the minute. The teams are very, very different. But I will say, I think Ireland deserve all the plaudits they're getting at the minute. They're an incredibly well-coached team. Their attention to detail is second to none. Their physicality, their basics, they give you very, very little, which is demoralizing when you're playing them. I've played against Ireland so many times and you feel like they just give you absolutely nothing, which means you've got to work for everything you get. They'll clearly be favourites going to Twickenham and clearly favourites.
Whoa.
A grand slam. but I was really encouraged by some of the Welsh lads. I thought Cam Winnett at fullback was really, really good again. I think he's been a brilliant find in the Six Nations. I thought Aaron Wainwright again went really well. Rio Dyer on the wing went really well. And, you know, there's some real positive signs for Wales and some individual performances. I agree with what Gat said a few weeks ago. This team's got the potential to be a really good team in probably, you know, a couple of seasons' time. They're not there just yet, but they've got the potential and the attitude and the appetite to learn and the hunger to get better to challenge teams in perhaps years to come. And actually, I think they'll fancy themselves against France in a couple of weeks' time in Cardiff with obviously how things went for France yesterday.
Yeah, you have to be careful laughing when you're living in France, at France, but they were bad. George North, quickly, how good was he as a seasoned campaigner? Over 100 caps.
Yeah, I'm shocked, Biggs. I was chatting about George North. You know when he was going through his concussion stuff on the wing and he was really struggling to get back and then they put him in at 13. You know, I played against George, for example. You played in 2013, the British and Irish Lions Tour in Australia. Do you know what I mean? You talk about a player that's been there and done that, but it's more the way that he's played the game, like direct, loads of contacts, loads of collision, in traffic. You know, he is a bit of a phenomenon, really, isn't he?
And I to go from great.
The wing, and then to go into 13, like, I think that centre partnership looks great. Albeit, like, the one thing coming from that game is around, and it's easier to talk about it than actually play against a team like Ireland, but is around line breaks. Like, I think I saw something like Wales were one line break the whole match. Yeah, compared to Ireland's 12. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think that lies necessarily just between like a 12 and a 13. But
well, that's how good Ireland's defence is as well. Yeah, exactly. Which doesn't get enough credit for. Everyone talks about Ireland's attack and how good their shapes are and how everyone, like Big said it then, around how everyone knows their role. And, you know, you've got three guys going to the line, you've got the ball out the back, you've got the next pod that are all running different angles. So you're getting one-on-one collisions, you know, whereas compared to England, you've got Gens trying to do it on his own because we don't know what we're doing and how we're supposed to attack. So you're getting three defenders smashing one player. Therefore, you don't get quick ball. Ireland are so good at that. But flip side of it, their defence as well.
Yeah.
Like one man competing at breakdowns and causing whatever number's on his back.
Yeah, it was whatever number. So whatever channel you're in. Like James Lowe, Matt Hanson when he's playing.
Bundy's been in there. Yeah, the back row are phenomenal over the ball. But then they're all on their feet, they're all organised, and it's so hard to break down. Well, just, that goes back to Biggs's point of they give you nothing.
Yeah, and just on that as well, it's like when Wales get the ball, right, and the ball's 10 minutes more in play than it was for the Scotland-England game, right, which is a lot, right? So 10 minutes more. Yeah. When you get the ball, you must be absolutely fucked because of what, you know, the amount of defence you've had to do. And when you look at it, it's almost like a computer game with Ireland, do you know what I mean? The way that they're kind of in sync, that is tiring to play.
Do you know what Ireland do really well as well, guys? They apply scoreboard pressure on you. Mm. All of a sudden, the game's at 17-0 down. Now, that alters how the opposition play. I said before the game, Wales have to keep in the game and have to keep it tight because if you allow this Ireland team to get ahead, they just dictate play and they force you to play in ways perhaps you don't want to play. You use a lot more energy up trying to move the ball because you're 17-0 down. Perhaps you don't go to your kicking game or the game that you've worked on all week and you feel like you have to force something and then all of a sudden a loose pass or overplaying a little bit brings their physical dominance into it, their brilliant defensive work into it. And all of a sudden, like you said, Jim, you're actually pedaling really hard not to go very far. How many times do you see Ireland not kick 3 points in international rugby and back themselves by going to the corner and turning it into 5 or 7 points? And all of a sudden then the pressure on the scoreboard and the pressure of what that does to you as a 9 and 10 and force your decisions and force your hand is almost as impressive as anything they do technically. So I think that's something that they do absolutely brilliantly and just force your hand so often in a rugby match.
Silly good, eh?
Unreal.
How much you reckon they're going to put on England?
I don't think England are as bad as you're making it.
No, I'm not, no, I'm just, well, that's why I'm asking you.
I think it'll be closer. I think
England are going to win. Go on, the boys.
I don't know if they'll win because this Ireland team look unbeatable, like in how they're playing. And there's still a few question marks over England, but I think England give them a proper game, whatever that means.
Well, Scotland got 30 points, didn't they? How many could Ireland get?
Wow.
They score a lot of points, don't they?
Yeah, but England do well against Ireland. You've had a couple of red cards over the last two games. Yeah, Twickenham as well.
You say we did well. Last time we beat them was 2020. Pre-COVID, Jim.
Yeah, but you don't include COVID, so them 2 years of our lives have been wiped off.
Deleted.
They've been deleted, so a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? Because from an England fan, you don't beat Ireland.
We just need to fuck up the Grand Slam.
France. That's what
we need. We need to ruin their Grand Slam.
How cool would that be? The Triple Crown. It's all on.
Let's not go to round five.
Sorry, I'm getting carried away.
You boys have got to get past Italy. Yeah?
What exactly? Well, should we talk about Italy?
Let's.
Should we go straight to the headline of it? So I watched it. I had the kids. As I say, it was chaos yesterday in my house. I was due to come down to London, so I couldn't rewind. They wanted to get Netflix on the TV. Dad's leaving for work again. Dad, please don't go.
Please don't go.
So I saw it all on social media. Now we're with two great people to talk about this, and Rob.
Fly off, aren't you, Rob?
You're a fly off, aren't you?
No.
What are you?
Centre.
Thinks he's a fly off.
Same thing, no?
Yeah. Ball playing kicking centre, Rob, yeah?
That's it. He's a ball playing centre. I actually thought you were a back row. Well, you used to be a back row.
I play anywhere, mate.
I'll play anywhere.
Apart from the row. So people who don't know, that Rob's about 5 foot five.
10 and a half.
With heels on. Yeah, he is. So at the end, what I didn't realise was Paolo Garbisi. So one, it's not windy, right? So that's the first thing to say. It's undercover. But I didn't realise all the melee that was going off in front. No French word. I don't mean scrum. Well, you can say front. That's where melee comes from. But the ball falls off. The water man's on. The physio's on. They're charging down.
I think it's a physio. I don't think it's a water boy.
Well, there's someone. That's detail. Someone's on there who shouldn't be on there.
Why shouldn't he be on there? If he's treating someone, he's actually allowed to be on there.
But he weren't treating anyone.
Well, he kind of was, and then he was stuck there. And he was like, hello!
I will spray you with the ice. Biggs, what would you have done there? Because the thing is with Italy, right, they've never been in that position, right? So that's the thing. The shot clock's on. It's the kick to win the game. They're in France. Paolo Garbisi, as experienced as he is, as a team, they're not experienced. What would you have done in that moment if that was you?
It's a really, really hard one, isn't it? Because I think he was probably really conscious of the shot clock, first and foremost. I don't think probably he was... As soon as the ball's probably fallen off the tee, the first thing that's come into his mind is pressure on the time. So he's probably there not thinking of somebody else in front of him, or he's just looking to try and get that ball back on the tee as quickly as possible and not get timed out and, I suppose, take that decision out of his hand. So, I mean, looking back, I don't know. It looks as if there perhaps could have been a retake or even the shot clock be reset or something. You know what I mean? Mm. But I think, I'm not sure I'd have done too much different, I got to be honest, to Paolo Garbisi in the moment. I think it's really easy when you're looking at it from your sofa and to say, oh, you should have stopped or whatever and things, or maybe even the...
You ain't stopping there, are you?
I don't think so.
Garbisi and Biggs and I have been in that position where you're kicking the goal. Garbisi's done nothing wrong. Now the shot clock's in, and kickers know that pressure, right? So the unfortunate thing is, if it doesn't fall off the tee, he probably slots it, they win. Because he kicks everything else in the game, doesn't he? Kick the conversion from the touchline. It's then the ball slips off, and everyone's going, oh, they should have reset it. You can't reset the shot clock because the ball's fallen off the tee.
He's getting charged down as well, though.
Well, this is the thing. So, and it goes back to Biggs when he was at Twickenham with the George Ford incident, the difference between a conversion and a penalty. You can't charge a penalty, but I've gone into the depths of the laws and all this stuff. Nigel Owens talks about it very well. He says, within 10 metres, you can't charge a kick, but the French have reacted because the ball has fallen off the tee. And then Christoph Ridley, I don't think, has done anything wrong. He's just sent him back from the first charger, who's not actually probably within 10 metres, but he put it on the tee. And it's just all the emotion growing and, you know, all that tension. And then there is a second, I think it's Taofi Fanua, who has a little sort of stumble towards it.
And you're allowed
time.
To do that. So you can pretend to charge it down, but you go into like this circle of fire that you can't go into.
I don't think you can charge it down, but you can move if you're not within 10 metres.
I didn't think you could do that. I thought you had to stand
still.
It's
etiquette, isn't it?
Oh, fuck the etiquette.
So, I mean, everyone's saying, oh, reset the shot clock, you know, or give him the chance to take the kick again because he's charged. But Christoph Ridley's in a tough position. One, he's in France. Two, if he lets him retake it, he ain't getting out there alive, probably. and three, I just think it's really unfortunate circumstances. Yes, Taofi Fanua, who's the second guy that moves towards the ball, that's bad sportsmanship. But he's actually not within 10 metres, I don't think. So
it just all looked wrong.
Yeah, it did.
Like at the end, like it just...
Yeah, I agree with that.
It just looked like chaos. And if I'm Christoph and I'm not, and it's a tough position, massive moment, I just think no one would be... Like if we were here now and he stopped it and said, look, calm down, Pablo, get off the pitch, mate. You're not needing anymore. You've got your bag, you know, you've got your water. Like you're not needed. Get off. Lads, don't move. Rugby etiquette. Paolo, off you go again, brother. Yeah. We were joking about last week. I had Italy by four. And I kind of said it thinking jest. Guzzi, Paul Gustard, who's at Stade Francais, and we've seen the clips that have gone viral around some of their players. Guzzi had France by 40. I said, Guzzi, mate, you are so French then if you think that. There's no chance. But then it could have been. But as we know, it wasn't. And it feels like an Italy win.
It's funny, actually, lads, obviously living here, coming into contact with a lot of French guys all the time sort of thing. A big thing, speaking to some of the players who are on the fringes of the squad and speaking to guys in the squad and speaking to some of the staff here, that World Cup quarterfinal defeat has hit them massively. They felt like it was their World Cup. They felt like it was everything was aligned for them. They were playing brilliantly. They beat the All Blacks in the first game. Both of you guys know what French people can be like. They're very emotional. So whereas you look at, say, like a team like Ireland, who had just as good a chance as winning the World Cup and disappointment of getting knocked out in the quarterfinal stage, Ireland have been able to park that professionally, move on to the next tournament and do a job each sort of match coming up. France have probably lingered on that a little bit and are just look a little bit like the France of old.
Yeah.
Before Sean Edwards came in, they look a little bit, you're not quite sure what's going to sort of come out of the tunnel. You're not quite sure what the energy levels are going to be like. You're not quite sure if they're, you know, if they're up for it or not. And they look a little bit like almost they want to just get this season out the way, if that makes sense, after the disappointment of, you know, a few months ago. But speaking to a few of the lads, they seem that that's a big thing. They've obviously had a bit of a reshuffle in the coaching team as well, so that's going to take a little bit of time. But the big thing around it has been that emotion around it, where it just seems to have absolutely zapped them from that quarterfinal in a home World Cup.
I don't know whether you've got to the point now where it's the Spider-Man thing where everyone's pointing at each other, like, as in it's your fault, like you're looking the same. Yeah. That my experiences of being there and with Fabien Galthié was exactly that. You're the players, we're the coaches, it's your fault. And like I imagine after the World Cup and the questions that would have been asked at a higher level, and we know how crazy it is up in the French Federation and everything around that, as in, I don't imagine...
You're not talking about corruption and Bernard Laporte.
It's exactly what I'm talking about. It's mental, you know? But they're going to be there. They're going to be looking round, and I imagine they're going to be blaming Jonathan Dante for making a reckless tackle. It's his fault. That's why. It ain't our fault.
Yeah.
It's his fault.
Blame anyone but yourself.
Anyone but yourself.
Blame the English guy first, and then if that doesn't stick.
And that's what happened after the World Cup, though. Yeah. That's what happened. So instead of Ireland sucking it up, and there was decisions in that game in the Ireland's All Blacks match around the scrum and stuff like that, where it was like 50-50 calls, it didn't go their way. But ultimately, like you said, they got on with it. They were knocked out. And probably it was a bigger story with Ireland because they were world number one. The fact that they'd never qualified past the quarterfinals is a bigger story for Ireland, arguably, than France, unless you are in France. But they've gone on and dealt with it. But they look unrecognisable. Yeah.
They're obviously missing their night. Look, you watch Luku and Jalibert for Bordeaux and they look absolutely world-class. For me, there's a big, big difference when you play 9 and 10 at club level and when you play 9 and 10 at international level. And those, I think those two are probably finding out that it's a huge step up. And they've got huge boots to fill as well, haven't they, in terms of, you know, impossible boots to fill.
Yeah, the pressure as well with
DuPont.
Them.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible to fill DuPont's boot. He's probably the best player of our generation. So, you know, it's impossible to fill his boots. And Intermac and the way that they work in sync, and they've guided France to this success over the last 4 years as well. So I think that's maybe a little bit of a problem. They've also spent 110 minutes with just 14 men on the field out of 260, which, I mean, is going to give you serious problems, whoever you're playing, sort of thing.
So
you know,
French, red discipline, card against, la discipline.
But also the way that Italy are playing now.
Yeah. Do you know what? Again, they should and or could have been out of sight, couldn't they, at halftime, France? You know, the amount of pressure they had, the amount of phases in Italy's 22. But they, what they are at the minute, it's Italy, are so, so brave, so resilient. And they dug in just to be 13-3 at halftime or whatever it was, or 10-3. was some effort from them. And then probably they were probably a little bit unlucky not to win the game normally. I thought they played the better rugby in that second half, again, with 14 men. And, I mean, obviously the incident at the end was really unfortunate. But, yeah, I agree. I think France look like they're missing some key players on top of the emotional hangover from the World Cup.
The French team, bar Dupont, isn't that dissimilar to what played in the World Cup.
Mm.
You know, you've still got Cyril Bailly, Winnie Antonio, you've got Marchand, you've got Mavaka in the front row, those sort of players. They're all still there. They're missing Dupont. Aldrete didn't play at the weekend. Donti gets sent off before half-time. Jalibert goes off injured, so they've got Ramos, who's a full-back but does play a lot at 10 for Toulouse, who's gone to 10. You've then moved Lebel to full-back, Mofana on the wing, and you're playing with one less because of Donti. So there was loads of things that went against them, but Biggs is right. Italy were very good in patches.
France, who beat the All Blacks in the opening game, and then the All Blacks nearly put 100 points on Italy a few months ago at the World
France
Cup.
France put 60 on them in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And it was a very similar team.
Yeah.
A huge thing to say is I generally believe this. With Dupont and Intermac in that team yesterday, I think France go in at halftime 27-3 up.
Yeah. But even Jalibert played at the World Cup. He was the 10 at the World Cup, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He looked a nasty injury as well.
Yeah. So, like, missing Dupont, world's best player. Aldrete wasn't playing. The red card. There was a lot of things that went against them.
They've got a fantastic squad. Like Biggs has mentioned it, you've got a 9 and 10 who are world-class at Bordeaux. And if you go based on the money that they're paid, and you've got Ramos as well, who is a fantastic player, like Biel Biri, I can't even say his name properly. Mofana, the size of the human beings that they've got, Gregory Aldrete, Charles Olivon, whatever second rows they decide to put in. Mavaka at hooker, Bugarit at hooker. You've got these lads coming through. And this is no disrespect to Italy. Mate.
Should be winning.
You should be winning. And that comes down to the person that's fronting it. And then you hear all the things about Sean Edwards. Who has Sean Edwards ever fell out with, though? Who's Sean Edwards ever fell out with?
No one.
And he's getting the blame.
Did you hear Sean Edwards after the game?
What?
During his interview. Like, he's done a bit of a French thing, but he's English. So he's gone, we expect to beat Italy. Defensively, we did well. Like his area, like his like defensively, with 14 men, we conceded 13 points, but it's the attack. So they're all at it. Spider-Man's everywhere, pointing at each other.
And fair play to Sean's got a point in fairness. Yeah. He's kept Italy to one dry with 14 men for 41 minutes or whatever 100%. It is. So Sean's probably, speaking to all the players, the players love Sean.
Yeah.
The players love Sean as well. Absolutely love him. And it's quite funny because he's doing the same sort of drills he was doing for us with Wales and just replicating them with France. The Auckland grid.
But we should give a shout out to a few of the Italian players. Like we spoke about Menoncello, Ignacio Brex, Ange Kupawatsu as well, Paolo Garbisi, and their attack and taking the ball to the line and taking risks all the way up into the last minute when they're trying to run it from their own trial line. You're like, no, don't do it. But they're actually making yards and they're making meters like there. You think they're without two of their best carriers, Lorenzo Cannoni and Seb Negri, friend of the show as well, like as in their big ball carriers. And Gonzalo Quesada has said, like, we're missing two of our big balls like to get over. So they've done that without them.
I
say they've done that. I'm asking if they're winning. Sorry, like it does sound like Italy have won, but to get a draw against France the way in which they did, I think it's massive for Italian rugby.
The feel good is all around Italy, isn't it? Rather than France, obviously. So again, speaking to Sergio Parisse, because he was coached by Gonzalo Quesada in Stade Francais, and he said that his attention to detail and his ability to give confidence to players is going to stand this Italian team in really good stead, because they've got some fabulous players, haven't they? As the players we've just mentioned, with a couple of returning for the trip to for the game against Scotland and the trip to Wales, and I really believe that they've got something in them, and they were really unlucky against England.
Whoa!
Clearly outclassed by Ireland, they stuck in, but they're certainly not going to be the last team to be outclassed by Ireland. Obviously a brilliant performance yesterday. So there's no doubt that they'll fancy themselves in Rome in 10 days' time, and they'll certainly fancy a trip to Cardiff in 2 or 3 weeks' time as well. So from all the things I'm hearing about him, Gonzalo Quesada, he's obviously got a really good record in France as a coach with Stade Francais, and the ability to give players confidence in the structure and the shape that they play and attention to detail is only going to stand Italy in good stead moving forward.
And just start, you mentioned Sergio Parisse then. Was he in training this morning?
He was. He was, um, He seemed okay, actually, to be fair. He didn't seem too downbeat or too disappointed.
Because he was on ITV yesterday looking, telling me he looked $1 million, yeah. or yeah. €1 million, we'll call it, not $1 million, €1 million.
I think he's probably worth a couple of million euros as well, Goody, so that's probably why he looked €1 million. He's looking all right, yeah.
Yeah.
I fell in love with him again on TV. I was like, oh.
Yeah, but the future's bright for Italian rugby. Yeah. Under-20s beat the French under-20s as well. Yeah. Nearly beat Ireland the week before. They're one of the best under-20s team in the world at the minute. So, yeah, watch this space.
What about Ross Vincent as well?
Ross Vincent?
Yeah. Well, Vincent. Yeah.
Hello.
Delivering, what was he doing? Dominoes, was he? A few weeks back. Mm. As a student down at Exeter. And now he's playing Six Nations.
There you go.
Great story.
Great story.
Biggs, been an absolute pleasure having you on again, mate. Want to see you playing, though. I keep looking out for Toulon fixtures and Dan Bigger Don in the 10 shirt. I knew that you hadn't played when I saw the result in Pau. So against Perpignan this week, you're going to be back and hopefully run the ship for Toulon. So good luck, mate. Great to have you on again.
Thanks, lads. Always a pleasure. Hope to be back soon.
Yeah, awesome. Quick predictions before you go. So do Scotland beat Italy in Rome?
Do Scotland beat Italy in Rome? Yes, by a couple of scores, I think. And I think Ireland beat England, but again, not by as much as people think. I'd say probably by a score or two again. I think Ireland would be too strong. I've got to be honest, I fancy Wales at the minute to do a job. The way things stand at the minute, I think they'll be more confident going into that game after the result yesterday. So, I fancy Wales to claim a scalp.
Attaboy, the great Dan Bigger. I'm with him. I'll just, whatever he says, I'll just go with
him. Yeah, we'll agree. Biggs knows. Biggs knows. Cheers, buddy.
Awesome, Biggs. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, buddy.
Legend.
Top lad. Yeah.
Friend of the show. No.
Part of the family, nearly, isn't he?
Part of the family. I don't know whether it's a good family to be a part of.
It's a great family.
Hey, it's a bit loose. Hey, a bit rough and ready.
There are hundreds of thousands of listeners, and it's our family, Jim, isn't it?
It is. He's in. He's like a cousin. We're like the two Langis, aren't we? It's dynasty. Hey, why are you laughing, Rob? You're part of the family.
Right, lads. Let's finish things off with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Seamless. Didn't even look down for that one.
No.
So he is comfortable.
Well, he hasn't got it fully right, though, has he?
No, because it's brought to you by
Moreland Brawl.
Rob, are you using Moreland Brawl?
I do, mate, yeah.
What do you think of it?
How have you got some? Did you buy it, or Jim give you some?
You did buy it?
No, you gave me about 2 years ago. You gave us a moment to come on.
Rob, now you made
2 years?
Mate, we're family.
I've got the moisturiser, I've got the T-shirt.
I've got nothing.
Yeah, well, he's lying, because there is no T-shirt. Well, so
where's mine? I say it every
Green
week.
Green Room, before you run off and get your popcorn, it's out there. But if you want to buy some,
I've got parents' evening tonight, that's what I've got.
All right,
well,
then you can't. You need to go to morelandbrawl.com and get yourself a caveman set. What does the caveman set get you?
A cave?
No, it doesn't. It makes you be able to live in the cave.
Right.
And you don't need to worry about a thing because you'll be smelling $1 million. Okay. Because you'll get the shower gel, the moisturiser and the beard oil.
Well, did you get any Veet in there as well? Is there something that
I
you can
put some Veet in for the people? But it's not, I don't know how.
More than Veet.
Oh, yeah, but I don't know how licensed that is. I've not used the Veet.
Okay.
You have to use it. Actually, I'm getting a bit airy at the back. are you getting that or not?
Yeah.
All right, I think we've sold morelandbrawl.com.
Yeah, let's start off with the good, and we're going to start off with, in France, not the French team. It is the tried.
Oh, say his name.
Daku Wanger. What a wanger.
Daku Wanger.
Yeah.
I posted it's done over 6.5 million views.
Yeah, it's crazy. His try for Stade Francais against Racing was absolutely ridiculous. Daku Wanger. Do you reckon he's got a wanger as well?
It doesn't matter.
No.
He could have nothing.
He has.
He could have nothing. Yeah. And scoring that, it doesn't matter. Yeah. I'd rather have nothing and have done that in my lifetime. Yeah.
So a massive shout out to Daku Wanger for his try. What else was good? Let's go to the Calcutta Cup then. Fourth straight time that Scotland have beaten England for the first time since 1896, Jim. Do you know how many years that is?
No, it was a long time.
How many years?
I look forward. What was it?
128.
Oh, is it? There you go. Yeah. I was about to actually think about it and work it back, but we've run out of time.
There you go. So massive shout out to Scotland for getting their second biggest ever victory over England. Dr. James Robson, sticking with the Scotland theme.
Yes.
What a picture. That's his last home game.
It is.
In the Six Nations.
Legend.
Yeah.
He sorted me out loads of times.
Did he?
I say sorted me out, looked after me.
Like finger up there.
Everything, mate. His finger has been in every hole of mine. I'll be honest, to fix it, whatever you want.
Massive shout out to James Robson, Dr. James Robson, on his career. And the picture of him on the shoulders of players holding up the Calcutta Cup will be one that will be on his mantelpiece for a long time. Duane van der Merwe obviously gets a shout out as well. First ever hat trick by a Scot, even though he said he was playing for England in the interview. So, first ever hat trick by a Scot against England in 153 years. So, well done, Big Duane.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't play against England next year. Mm. Keeps killing us, that boy. But
everyone's saying, oh, he's South African. We'll speak to James Lowe, Mac Hansen, Bundiaki.
Oh, who's saying this?
Oh, just people on, you know, when you're talking about Doohan. You've said it a million times.
Doohan van der McMurver.
I tried to say it on the show at the weekend. Doohan van der McMurver. I've messed it up. I've just nailed it there seamless, but I fucked it up.
There we go. What else was good? Italy. Get a shout in the good.
Of course.
So close to their first away win over France in the Six Nations, but showing some real signs of progress. And sticking with Italy, this week, the good goes to Italy under-20s, James.
Oh, referenced it earlier.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier. They beat France under-20s for the first time ever in their history. Not only that, though, their scrum was ridiculously good. And then they sang Nessun Dorma in the changing room to celebrate. So if you haven't seen that clip, get on there. That is proper, proper good singing of Nessun Dorma. Italy under-20s. They nearly beat Ireland the other week, didn't they?
Yeah, they're coming good.
Italy under-20s, you win the good this week. The bad, a few bits of bad. We're going to start off with Racing. We spoke about them in the good, but not in a good way, because Daku Wanga scored an unbelievable try against them. But anyway, they lost the derby at home to Stade Francais, which is four defeats in a row now, and they're back down in mid-table after leading the way for so long in the top 14. England get a mention of the bad this week. 22 turnovers conceded, 25 handling errors. Really disappointing performance after 20 minutes from England. But the bad this week, we're going to go to France. We're going to give it to France. Three straight home games without a win. Played half the tournament down to 14 men. Something's not right. It ain't great. So France, they're going to get the bad this week.
Yeah, right.
Then the ugly. Only one bit of ugly, really. We spoke about it earlier. Jonathan Donty, two upright in the tackle, running the risk of getting a head-on-head collision, flying into it as well at pace. Didn't even dip. No complaints at all with a red card there. So that's why Jonathan Donty wins the ugly.
Massive shout-out before we go.
Oh. Go on.
Andy Rowe. Baby.
They had it.
Yeah. Baby Jim.
Baby
they
Jim.
They called him Big Jim.
Baby Jim.
Big Jim Rowe.
No, they did not call
Matilda.
It.
Matilda. Baby Matilda. They had a lovely little girl.
Ah, congrats to Andy Rowe.
I saw the photo, which was very nice. So, Andy Rowe, we know you listen.
I hope she's got Jackie's looks.
Yeah, I think she has. Yeah. I think she has.
Congrats, so, Andy. Yeah. And Jackie.
Exactly. Matilda Rowe. Matilda Big Jim Rowe, apparently. That's what he said.
There you go.
Which we'll take. So, Andy Rowe, big shout out to you. I'd say we miss you, but we don't. But we love you. Cheers. Right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, James. And thanks, producer Rob.
Cheers, boys. Yeah, you haven't given much today.
Sorry, lads, I'm dusty. No,
okay. Thanks, Dan Bigger, as well.
Yeah, but that's you're coming on to that. Rob didn't give us much, but the great Dan Bigger gave us a lot. As did the listeners.
They did.
So, thank you for listening, everyone.
Don't forget to check us out on YouTube as well. And make sure you've subscribed
on
Spotify.
Nearly seamless, that a boy. Rugby Spot.
Spot a pod.